And welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mick Spell-Morrigan. And once again, I am taking you on a journey into the question, why horror? Where each week, myself and a different fabulous guest try to unpack this fun and entertaining question. So before we jump into our discussion, this week I am joined by the wonderful Amber. So if you can just kind of introduce yourself, what it is that you kind of do and kind of like your connection to horror.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. My name's Amber, Amber T, aka Hornblood Fire, as I go on the internet. I'm a horror writer, podcaster, shit poster, which I tend to do most of the time now. I write for Ghouls magazine. I write for Grimoire of Horror. I'm also about to start writing for another publication, which is a little bit hush hush for now, so I'm not going to say anything. But I have my own podcast where guests come on, and twice a month we talk about, they give me three words of things that they like, and I find a horror movie that matches those three words, and then we hang out, we shoot the shit, that's my thing.
Amazing. Well, thank you for coming on. I'm excited to talk to you about all the questions that I've thrown together and see just where this discussion goes. Like, as we said before we started recording, we've been like kind of like orbiting each other on Twitter and stuff like that, so it's nice to actually kind of like have you here, well, virtually as a
in my
real
little screen box.
Yes, so you've expanded beyond Twitter icon, so like you're slightly more corporeal than you were before.
I'm getting my particles.
Exactly. But no, I'm excited to actually talk with you about horror because it's going to be good. I know that. But I like to kick off each of these discussions with this first question because I know every horror fan has an answer to it. And I just love hearing the different films that get mentioned. So for yourself, what's the first horror film that you remember watching? And then slightly related, because sometimes these answers can overlap, sometimes they're different. What was the film that made you what was the horror film that made you a fan of the genre?
So the first thing you need to know about me is I'm an only child. And only children by nature are freaks, are weirdos. So even from like a very young age, I was a creep. Like, I used to talk to curtains. Like, my two best friends were two curtains. Me and my dog used to like stare at this one spot on the wall, and I would like laugh and smile, and my dog would bark at it, and my mom was like, right, burning the house down, like, that's it, I've had enough. Only children are very strange. So I've been in that kind of weird little place since I was young. And also, when you're an only child, you don't have an older sibling to like introduce you. I know a lot of people in horror like get into it because they catch their brother or sister or someone watching these movies. But for me, I didn't have that. So I didn't actually see like my first horror movie until I want to say like early teens, maybe like 13, 14. And I remember this was at the time when it was still kind of at the video nasty end of Britain, like, after, like Mary Whitehouse and all that shit. So a lot of these films you still couldn't get, but my parents had a lot of bootleg VHSs, like a lot of adults back then. And the first one I remember, like, me and my friends used to steal them and watch them together. Very viscerally, I remember watching The Evil Dead. And, you know,
formative
straight,
film.
Literally, like, coming straight out of the gate. With, I think before that, I had seen, like, The Sixth Sense and the others, like, very kind of, like, slow burn, quiet, still scary. Those films are still scary, but they're more quiet. So then, you know, coming out of The Evil Dead, there's slime, there's gore, there's absolute batshit insanity, and I could, like, not sleep for weeks. It was too much. And then the other two I remember about that around that same time was The Shining, Kubrick's Shining, which again, I think for a young person watching that film, that's kind of a like a it's
There's a
like a
lot going on.
there's a lot going on in The Shining, and it's not like well, I mean, it is a horror movie, but it's not like, a slasher or something traditional. It's a very I guess now you would call it elevated horror, even though I don't believe in that. But yeah, it's like it's odd. It takes thought. And then another Kubrick film I saw around the same time was A Clockwork Orange, which isn't a horror movie per se, but it definitely introduced me to violence in movies, which is something that I have continued to enjoy. And also the problematic villain, which is something that I continue to enjoy now.
Yes, no, I like that. That's like a nice kind of mix of different films to kind of set you on your journey. But I really like the way you kind of prefaced it all by talking about, your background as like being an only child and stuff like that. Because as I've had all of these discussions with each different guest that's come on, I've definitely been noticing that pattern that horror fans either had like, a parent or a sibling that was like their guiding hand that was kind of like, I'm going to introduce you to the horror stuff, don't tell mom and dad, or don't tell your mom, stuff like that. Or it's usually like an act of rebellion, as in you've been told that you can't watch this stuff, so you're going to seek it out, like just because you've been told you can't.
Yes,
And it's always like one or
exactly.
the other, and it's so interesting. And actually, just because like you mentioned, the video nasties and stuff like that, like, I always kind of find that hilarious that like, that era literally created a list of films that
Yes,
were
the
banned.
must-see.
So, but so it literally ends up being like, you're literally telling all these people the films they're not allowed to watch. What do you think they're going to do but seek
Exactly.
those out? Do you not know how humans work? Like, if you're told you're not
Exactly.
allowed to do something,
Exactly.
you're going to seek it out.
No, I mean, I see like lists now. I mean, people have been doing this since the video nasty thing came up, but there are like lists on Letterboxd that are like the video nasty list, and it's on Wikipedia, and you can go through it and check it and check through it. But the funniest thing is, like, you watch a lot of them now, and I mean, I guess it's all in context, but they're not that terrible. I mean, there was more terrible stuff at the time. I want to think of an example off the top of my head, but I'm blanking right now. But you know what I mean? Some of them like weren't that awful. It was just that whole like gross conservative with a capital and small c. Just as yeah, like we were talking about earlier about like the whole Mary Whitehouse thing. Very, very much that.
100%. And I think, like, as you said, we look back at them now and they aren't as bad. And I think it's like the video nasty era was when so much of like practical effects and stuff like that were really kind of coming into their forefront. They were like, the stuff you could do was more impressive than previous eras and stuff like that. So it was harder to discern, is this real or not? And that's part of like, that was part of why it was people were so reactionary. And yes, it comes from this staunch conservativeness and like prudishness and just all this type of like a group of people dictating what others can watch or not, which actually leads me into one of the questions which I have. And it's one of the ones that like every horror fan has to have this kind of internal debate. They kind of have to go through this topic with themselves and with groups because it is a hard thing to kind of reconcile with. But like for yourself, like where do you land when it comes to censorship? Like, do you think that there are lines that can't be crossed when it comes to what can be portrayed or represented on screen? Or do you think that any form of censorship is like, on the road towards fascism, and art is art and everything should be permissible. So I want to know what your perspective is. Where do you land on it?
So I think I used to be more when I was younger. I used to be more in the camp of you can't say this, you can't do this. And obviously there are still things that you like. I'm talking like things like abuse, like real abuse of human beings. Very illegal things. Those are things you cannot put on screen. And I don't know why you would want to anyway, but the older I get, the more I'm also seeing this kind of almost worrying move towards like Puritanism, especially in the horror community, which kind of worries me because like horror at its core is subversive. And it's wonderful that horror has become this place of comfort for so many people. I love that. But that doesn't take away the fact that horror has always defied the boundaries of good taste. You know, it's meant to destroy them. It's meant to make you uncomfortable. It's meant to make you scared or grossed out. And I'm seeing a lot of sterility recently, especially towards sex and violence. And I understand that a lot of these things can be really nasty to watch, and that's if people don't want to watch them, that's completely fair. But I see something I see recently is like artists don't owe you sensitivity. I think if there's something that makes us uncomfortable, we have a responsibility not to interact with it. So that's where, you know, for me, animal cruelty, like real animal cruelty, is my like hard line. And I, well, animal cruelty is the wrong one because I will judge people for enjoying that. Let's say, I don't know, rape revenge movies, for example. For a lot of people, rape revenge movies are a very triggering topic, and they will not touch them, and that's completely fair enough, and I respect that. But I've seen recently on Twitter a lot of judgment towards people who might find that cathartic. I know, yeah, recently there was, I'm not going to mention the film, but there was a film going around on Twitter that I personally didn't like, but it's a very gory, very disturbing tale of two young girls. And some people enjoy it, and that's fine. But there was this trend of people saying, like, this is disgusting. If you enjoy this, you're a bad person. Like, and especially, like, you're a bad woman. I was like, hang on a minute. Have we just gone back in time? I think, like, especially for marginalized people, you know, like women, LGBTQ people, like people of color, these, like, you can't judge people for enjoying stories that might be cathartic to them, even if it's, you know, quote unquote problematic. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I hope that makes
Yeah,
sense.
no, that makes sense. And I love how you say that's where I'm at now, because like for me, it's something that I'm always flip-flopping on, because I'm always like, sometimes I'll be like, I'll have my stance of like, no, nothing should be censored ever, and then I'll come across a film that like really like irks me out, and I'm just like, and then I find out like the filmmaker was like a dirt bag, and I'm just like, wait, I don't think this film should ever have been made. And then I'm like, wait, does that mean I want to censor things? I don't know. It's really nuanced. I don't like, and I think at the end of the day, the approach I take is that it doesn't work when we take these binary views of things should either be censored or not. Things are either good or bad. Like, I think, you know, we need to lean into the fact, you know, that binaries are restrictive and reductive, and we should be more fluid and flux and embrace that gray area, and like just critically engage with everything. And as you said, it comes down to what an individual's own lines are. Like, what is like, I think a lot of people aren't aware of what their own boundaries are. And like, not just for when it comes to engaging with films, but I just think as people. And like, for me, the reason I think of that is because of the fact that like, I'm very much like categorically polyamorous, non-monogamous. So I've kind of like jumped away from the thinkings of like heteronormative monogamous structuring of dating of society. And to be able to be an ethically non-monogamous person, you have to really know what your boundaries are and know how to not cross other boundaries. I think when it comes to a lot of people who are very much kind of, you know, conditioned into monogamy, haven't really questioned things, like they're very much following the norms of what society tells them to, they don't really know what their own boundaries are. And I feel that makes it harder to engage with films, because if someone doesn't know what their own personal boundaries are, they'll start applying it across the board. They'll say, this thing makes me uncomfortable, therefore nobody should watch it, rather than this thing makes me uncomfortable, so I'm just not going to engage with it.
And I think a lot of the time people are surprised by the things that do upset them or don't upset them. And I'm not in any way suggesting that people should, you know, watch things that are going to make them uncomfortable, but for me personally, I used to be very uncomfortable with a lot of things. Rape Revenge was one of them specifically, or bad presentations, generally misogynistic presentations of women, and like you know, which is everywhere in horror. But I found that like it was kind of, this is really hard to put into words. I was kind of like limiting and restricting myself on movies that I might otherwise enjoy. So I kind of like pushed myself a little bit further, and you know, if I was having a hard time, I would hit pause and walk away from it. But now I'm at the point where I have found my boundaries, and let me tell you, there are not many of them. They have pretty much, they've gone.
No, I really like that, and I love how you kind of like said that you're able to, you know, you're aware enough of yourself to be able to kind of go, I'm not like having a good time with this right now, so I'm going to switch it off, which I think across the board a lot more people should do. And I think it just shows that a lot of people again just aren't necessarily critically engaging with the media that they're watching, with the art that they're watching. And now, this isn't to say that everyone should always intellectually and critically engage with what they're watching. Like, as in, like, I love my schlocky B horror films. They don't require my brain. That's specifically why I love them. And but the thing is, I'm still kind of aware of that. And as in, I'm like kind of going, I know I don't need to engage, so I'm going to have a fun time. But I think a lot more people should kind of take that stance of, you know, and maybe it's like this thing about, like, I want to know what you think, but maybe it's like a sign of this horror fan. And like, I do feel that there's this attitude that you have to watch certain horror films to be a horror fan, or you have to sit, you have to watch the entire film. And I'm just like, no, that's not the case. Like, as in, you know, or for like on the flip side, there's this idea that you have to have watched but also enjoy certain horror films to be a horror fan. And I'm just like, going back to Kubrick's The Shining, that's one of the films that just didn't work for me. Like, just doesn't work for me. And you know, I've gone back, I've tried it two or three times. Every time it's just, nope, doesn't work. But I love that it works for other people, because you know, at the end of the day, it is a classic of horror cinema. So I'm glad that it is something that works for a lot of people. Just doesn't work for me, and I'm aware of that, so I can just not engage. But that doesn't make me less of a horror fan.
No way. And I was just gonna say, like, I bet people have given you shit for not liking The Shining, and that's like, that really pisses me off, 'cause like it doesn't matter what, you know, there are no horror movies that you have to see. You have to, I know we all like to say, oh, it's a must see, but horror is so massive. It's such a gigantic, huge genre that has, you know, strands and tendrils of other subgenres and other subgenres coming off of it. It seems so restrictive to say you have to watch this, and if you don't, then you're not a true fan. Like, I literally saw John Carpenter's Halloween 2 years ago. I had never seen it before then, and I loved it. And then I watched, in the same year, I watched Friday the 13th for the first time. Did not care for it. Thought it was really boring. Haven't watched any of the sequels and don't intend to. And you know, my big thing is, I don't really like slashers. I don't care for them. I've seen Scream, the first one, and I've seen Scream 5, and that's it. I don't plan on watching anymore. They don't do it for me. And I know I've seen a lot of things. Oh, you have to like, especially, sorry, tangent, especially the 80s horror thing, which really gets to me, because there's a certain type of 80s horror fan, shall we say, that of a more very restrictive, white, cis heteronormative male subsector, which, you know, nothing wrong with that, but they're very much into their 80s horror. And anyone who doesn't like that, you know, they're like, oh, this new crap from A24 is not good. It's not good. I prefer the 80s, the 80s, the 80s. And I'm like, mate, the 80s was full of crap. Like, for every The Fly that we had in the 80s, or every, like, I don't know, amazing piece of classic cinema, we also had, I don't know, something like, What I watched the other day, Black Roses, which was one of the worst films I've ever seen. Like the 80s was full of shit.
Yep.
And I don't like this, like this worship of it. And yeah, I think it's the gatekeeping in horror is really, it's boring because I'm like, why would you not want to share with people? You know, when someone says to me, oh, I really don't like horror, my first thing is, I want to make them like it. Like I want to bring them in. I want to be friends with them and, you know, show them how many amazing things we do have in this genre. So I've never understood that you must see this or you must not like this. It's just, it makes no sense to me.
100%. And like I think, from where one perspective, if you're like wanting to know, like, say, the history of the genre, in the sense, if you want to be like, why did we get Carpenter's Halloween? Then you would seek out the films that gave the lead up to it, so you can you can understand the DNA of why you have that film. That's one thing. That's kind of more wanting to appreciate and understand the history of a certain subgenre, blah blah blah. But saying that you have to watch X a number of films to be considered a fan of the genre is just hogwash. That's just stupid. And like, it's interesting though that you mentioned that like glut of 80s horror, and that's where my brain goes to as well, about there is this type of attitude of they don't make good horror anymore. And it is, I tend to think of the cisgender straight white heteronormative white 80s horror fan who's just not happy that they're no longer represented on screen all the time. So yeah, I think it links into that. But on the flip side, there is this weird like stance from like certain kind of like younger generation, like younger millennials and upcoming Gen Zs as well. But there is this weird stance of, I don't watch films before 2000 or before 90. Like, there is this weird stance of old media isn't good automatically because it's old. And it's like, no, again, this is binary thinking. We need to be more flux and fluid. Fuck binaries.
Exactly. And exactly again, because there is so much. Like there is you know, you could watch 10 horror movies a day for the rest of your life and you'd never see them all. So yeah, to say like I don't watch this or I don't watch this is very reductive and like I said, just boring. Like this is meant to be like how much creativity and imagination there is in this genre and you want to restrict yourself? Like
Yeah.
could not be me.
No, it's just that's what it is. It's just limiting and unnecessarily reductive. So kind of stemming from that, and you've kind of mentioned about like, how horror there's are so many subgenres that link to each other. I want to know for you, when it comes to engaging with horror and watching horror, like, do you have like hard lines, as in on one side this is horror, on another it isn't? Or for yourself, is it kind of more fluid and flux that there are things that could be considered horror, which other people might not consider. Like, for yourself, how do you approach it?
I always go to it in like if it has something horrific in it, and that could be anything. You know, that could be gore, that could be a demon, that could be a ghost, that could be a supernatural thing, or it could be something that happens every day. You know, in reality, I mean, one of the scariest things in the world is people. People are being cruel and being horrible to other people. So for me, I don't know, things like I've seen films like Silence of the Lambs, for example. I've seen people say that's not a horror movie. And I'm like, well, to me, it is a horror movie because it makes me feel scared. Not only in the fact that, you know, it's a Hannibal Lecter slasher, but also the way that Clarice is treated in the movie by most of the men
Literally every
around her.
man.
Like that's horror, baby. Like that's in itself. And again, like the new film, what's it called? Micah Monroe, Watcher. I don't know if you've seen that. I won't spoil it. But it's a very stylish, I guess you would call it a thriller. I mean, I guess technically it is the thriller, but there are horrific elements to it. So in my mind, I'm inclined to call it a horror movie. And for me, like I'm very, very loose with the boundaries of this. To me, if it scares you, it's a horror movie. You know, when I was young, the scariest thing in the world to me was the film Pinocchio. the animated
That's a
film.
dark film, so yeah,
It's
that could definitely
scary, right?
that can
It's
definitely fall
scary.
into horror in some ways.
Exactly. To me, that's a horror movie. To me, Midsommar is a horror movie. To someone else, it's not. It's a, a thriller or a drama. But yeah, I don't know about for other people, but for me, if it's got something that makes me go, oh my God, then that's horror for me. I'm sold on that.
Brilliant. And like, yeah, I'm very much the same. I'm very like, maybe it comes to the fact that I am very much fluid as a person in every way. So when it comes to engaging with horror, like I have very like little to like, it's a very loose definition for
Yes.
me. Like, you know, I think I'm very much, I take the Mike Munzer route from Evolution of Horror of like, I'll try and find a way to classify anything I'm watching
Literally,
as
yeah.
horror because I'm like such like a horror geek and nerd, and I just live and breathe horror. I'm just like, I'm watching something that on paper isn't horror. I need to find a reason to classify it as horror so I can say, I love this new horror movie, and someone else will
Exactly.
look at me and go, I don't like, this is something that dawned on me the other day, is that as someone who is very much polyamorous and non-monogamous, most rom-coms could be classified as horror because they are very heteronormative and
Oh yeah.
monogamous.
Oh yeah, there are some scary ones. I mean, one of my favorite films is I'm not gonna lie, is The Holiday with Cameron Diaz and Jack Black. But the thought of like those two very, very straight, very white couples, like that is scary. I mean, to a lot of people that is very frightening.
But yes, I have very loose definitions. But actually, coming to that, because you said, you know, if it kind of elicits that response of like, that's kind of for you what is classified as horror. I want to know what you think about this because, like, when I started these conversations, I originally thought this was like something that just existed on Twitter, was just terminally online people. But as I've talked to everyone, I've realized, no, there are actually people out there who think like this. So I want to know what you think. Like, I see a lot of people will say, you know, say whatever film name wasn't a good film because it did not scare me. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that a horror film has to actually like be quote unquote scary to be considered good or effective?
No, I mean, I think it helps, but also being scared is like completely subjective. Like I don't know, I'm thinking of like something like Ready or Not, which I really like. It's a great movie. Is it scary? To me, hell no. It's not like nothing in that film is scary. But I know someone who watched it who doesn't watch horror movies, and she was like, oh my God, it was so scary. I was so tense the whole way through. But no way. It's like I still love that movie, and it's a good horror movie. Just because it doesn't scare me doesn't mean there's not someone out there who it isn't going to scare. I mean, for me, like one of the scariest movies of the last 5 years was I brought it up before, but Midsommar, and I watched it with my mom, and my mom, God love her, she is a bit of a baby when it comes to horror movies, but the whole time I was like ha hands over my eyes, like not looking, and she when we finished it, she was like, was that it? Oh my God, you're a hard ass. But yeah, again, like it was completely subjective. I thought Midsommar was a horror movie. It didn't make her bat an eyelid. So no, I don't think that a horror movie has to make you feel scared. I mean, you general you personally, for it to be a good film. Like I said, it does help though. And I do love those movies where, and it doesn't happen a lot these days, sadly, because I am completely desensitized. But those films where I'm like, oh my God, that is terrifying. Like for me, that is, well, that's chef's kiss.
No, I'm just like loving the way you've said everything, but it's literally like you're like the ideal type of person who should like the, in my head I'm thinking of like how should people engage with horror. Everything you're saying, I'm just like, this is it, this is how it should be done,
Thank
because
you.
like you're literally saying, you know, like you're aware of the fact that hey, something could not scare me, but it could completely scare the pants off someone else. It doesn't mean it wasn't good, etc. And also the fact that you're actually aware of the fact that you're desensitized, which is something that I think a lot of horror fans are not aware of. Like,
Oh
kind
yeah.
of going back to that kind of nostalgia for 80s horror and stuff like that, I do think there's a type of horror fan, and it's not just people who are like from that era, it's just in general across the board, like regard across the generations of horror fans. I do think there's like a subset of horror fan that is going into every horror film like completely oblivious of what they themselves are bringing to the film they're watching. So like
Yes.
they're seeking out that first scare, their first experience watching horror, like they're wanting that like first time again. And it's like, you're not going to get that. You're never going to get the first time. The reason
Exactly.
it's a first time is because it's your first time and it's so held up in your head. And they're like
Exactly.
going to be comparing everything to that first visceral experience. And it's the more horror you watch, the more predictable it becomes, the more you're able to see when a jump scare will happen, like the more you identify the tropes. That doesn't
Exactly.
mean that those films aren't good or effective. It just means that you're desensitized to it
Exactly.
working. Like as you said, you could take someone from the street that doesn't watch horror, put them watching the same film you're watching. You could be like, yeah, like saw that jump scare, saw that doesn't work. Nope, I couldn't predict it. That person's like shitting themselves because they don't watch horror. And I just wish more people were taking your approach of kind of actually being aware of themselves while watching films.
Oh yeah, well, I mean that's something I had to. I think as well, if you're, like us who spend a lot of time online talking to other horror fans, it's you kind of forget that not everyone thinks like us. So I'm saying us, like we're a very exclusive club of people, which we are. But yeah, I mean, I had a job interview a while back, and I mentioned that I liked horror movies, and the woman who was interviewing me was like, I watched Alien once and I've never watched a horror movie since then. And I was like, wow, we have such different lives. And then, but her life is probably more quote unquote normal to most people's experience. Like, we live in this little corner of the internet and of the world that we've made for ourselves where we can watch these movies with other people who love them. But like you said, whenever we watch a new movie, we're watching it as horror fans. And that is something I've had to get over, because sometimes I'll be watching something and I'm like, oh God, this isn't scary. And I'm like, well, it's not scary to you because you're a freak and can't process normal emotions anymore. For me, it's gore as well. Like, I am a gore hound, and I have watched, like, these weird, like, faux snuff Japanese movies like Tumbling Dollar Flesh or Guinea Pig, or things that your average person won't touch with a barge pole. But then something like Saw, that's gory. But and I always forget that. I'm like, yes, that is a gory film. But to me, I'm like, yeah, child's play. But Saw is friggin' gory. And I think I'm, that's just my level has gone too far, and maybe I need to rein it in.
No, never rein in what your joy is. I think society tells us to limit our joy and fuck that noise. Whatever we find joyful, we should embrace wholeheartedly. So no,
Yes,
don't
love
rein it
that.
in, embrace it. But yes, but actually I love how you mentioned Saw, because like I think like the first film, Saw, it's really interesting and funny, and I think a good kind of comparison is almost like the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Because like both these films, because of what's come after them, have this like heightened reputation of being
Yes.
like super gory films. And it's like, well, no, they're not really. Like the original Saw, there's very little in it. It's really only kind of the end, like, is the most like gory set piece. The rest of it is kind of like, no, it's like mostly just two people in a room. And then Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they literally do not show anything. It's all suggestive and in your mind. Like, and it plays on what you're seeing. But I just love how these films like can end up taking on a life of their own once they
Oh,
enter the
yeah.
zeitgeist, that it's like a game of Chinese whispers or something like that. Like there's the way it started off, but then there's the way people have it in their heads, and sometimes they can be very different. So stemming from that, I want to know what you think about this topic, because again, it's another one that I'm always like kind of flip-flopping on. But like, do you think, like, say, the concept of like the death of the author can be applied to horror films? Like, there's the horror filmmaker, or just the filmmaker in general, but there's the filmmaker's intent, their vision of what they put out there. But then there's what we as a viewer take away. And like, do you think that one perspective is more right than the other, or do they just exist in tandem? And yeah, I want to know what you think on that.
I think, I mean, on a similar note, I think as a horror fan, a lot of the times we do, if you choose to do this, you do have to separate the art from the artist a lot of the times. Because let's face it, a lot of the, I'm thinking, your Polanskis, your Eli Roths, a lot of these directors, have not very savory history, shall we say. But to me, and that's just me personally, I would never say I can't enjoy the movie because, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Rosemary's Baby isn't like a perfect horror movie. It is. But to me, although he had a huge hand in it and it's arguably like his talent and his vision, I have to separate them because I don't want to celebrate that fucker and I don't want to give him money. But I think as well, I don't really like the whole like, I think boxing directors in to, auteur theory or like, I'm thinking recently of like David Cronenberg because he released Crimes of the Future this year, which I really enjoyed, and I thought it was a really good, really solid comment on like bodily autonomy and the importance of handing the rights to your own human body back to you. But I saw a lot of people online complaining, like, oh, it's not body horror enough. It's not Cronenberg enough. I was like, well, first of all, David Cronenberg hasn't worked in body horror since like the 80s. And secondly, I think that's really quite reductive is to shove a director in a box. I mean, even if the box is kind of their own making, I mean, body horror would not be the same without Cronenberg. But to say, like, oh, we want more of this thing and this thing only. Makes me feel a bit funny, but I guess it kind of is more that thing of the audience taking the film away from the director, and molding it into a way that they want to. But do I do it? I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't know if I've thought about it before. I tend not to try and read, unless the director's really famous. I mean, I try not to read up too much about them because I don't really want to know their intention. Like, I want the my take on the movie. And that's another reason why I try not to read people's thoughts on Twitter too much or Letterboxd or whatever before I've seen it, because I don't want their thoughts, changing how I feel about the movie. And then sometimes you'll watch a movie and you'll take something away with it, and you'll talk to someone else, and they're like, "Oh, I didn't get that at all." And I really love that. I love when that happens.
100%. Yeah, and I love what you're saying there. And yes, like that does stem from that kind of death of the author question. So I love how you already brought it up and answered it succinctly. But the whole art versus artist thing is something horror fans have to reconcile with a lot because unfortunately there are problematic filmmakers in the horror genre. And like I like what you said that, I can appreciate this film, but that doesn't mean I'm supporting X person. I don't want to give them money. Because I do think there's a very like critical difference between engaging with a piece of art as a piece of art and commercially supporting a problematic person. And I think once you're aware enough to be able to go, I enjoy this film because it's a good film or it's a classic piece of horror history, so I can appreciate its place, but I'm no longer going to continue buying tickets for this filmmaker or putting more money in their pocket. Like they're two different stances. So yeah, like if someone's like, Polanski's a piece of shit, but I still watch Rosemary's Baby versus I'm first in line to visit the next Polanski picture. They're two different approaches. So
They are.
the latter, I'm probably going to judge you. The first one, I won't. But yeah, I think, but again, it comes down to what people's own personal boundaries are. Some people literally cannot engage with media by problematic people because it's too triggering for their own traumas or something like that. And that's fair once they're trying not to take the pro approach of nobody should ever watch this person's stuff. I think everyone has their own personal stances. But I like what you meant, that point you made about, people have taken the films away from the directors and they've kind of molded it into their own, like, this is a thing that exists for them. and we only want you to do this now. It's like if a similar overlap, it's very kind of a similar vein to people who, like, who are music fans. Like sometimes, you can be a fan of a singer or a band, and they're just like, no, we don't want you to bring out new stuff. We want you to play the album that I'm nostalgic for. Thank you very much. I came here for the hits, not for the new stuff. And it's very funny that people will be like, we'll do that. They'll kind of be like, no, I don't actually care for you as an artist. I just care for what I have an attachment to.
Exactly. I mean, would I be disappointed if like Ari Aster comes out and his next movie is like a rom-com? Yes, I will be disappointed. But I want him to explore as an artist, as a director. And I try not to. David Lynch is maybe the exception, but I try not to get attached to directors anyway, because I think you should watch art for art's sake, not for the artist's sake. But again, David Lynch is an exception because I do love him.
Yeah,
Strange
and
man.
it oh, very, very strange. Like, but also it's really funny because like I'm also very much like, yeah, I don't really like the idea of auteur theory and kind of like stuff like that. And then you just have David Lynch and it's like, okay, well he like you can't not have auteur theory with
Oh
David Lynch.
yeah. I feel like with most things, David Lynch is the
Very much so. Like,
exception.
and like, he's probably like one of the only people that can make. I saw a video of him where he literally gets the person who's interviewing him to take their underwear off and he puts the underwear in his mouth. And like,
Thank
anyone
you.
else, that would be disturbing. But because it's David Lynch, you're just like, ah, oh, that's just David Lynch.
I feel like David Lynch is in a really interesting position because he's one of the very few directors who are like, stop asking me about my films. It's yours now. You take it and you make your story with it and you give it your meaning. And everyone is asking him, like, what does it mean? What does it mean? He's like, it's yours. Whatever you want it to mean is what it means. And that's part of the reason why I love his work so much is because, to some people that it frustrates them because it doesn't have a tangible quote unquote meaning. For me, I love that because there are a billion, billion different meanings it could have, and he's given us that gift, basically.
Yes, 100%. And again, like I think it comes down to the way people are kind of engaging with, the media that they're watching as well. Like particularly if you take like kind of like David Lynch like as one example, like, there is this very kind of frustrating type of like just film fan in general, but it also exists within horror. But there is this type of film fan that's like, if a film doesn't have like a consistently coherent in their eyes plot that goes from A to B to C to D, then it's like not a good film. Whereas like David Lynch is like, no, fuck that. My films are just gonna be like playing with ideas and playing with visuals. Yes, there is a overarching plot, but you could also like just ignore that and it still just is this beautiful work of like something that's just gonna mess with
Oh,
your brain.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like something like Mulholland Drive, obviously it does have a plot, but it's also just a series of gorgeous images. You could reassemble them in any way that you wanted to, and you would get what you want out of it. It's almost like reading tarot. Like I read tarot, and I've never been one who thinks it predicts the future because I personally I don't think that it could, but it's symbols, and you project your meaning onto it, and it reflects whatever meaning you take from it, and I love that very much.
Yeah, no, I love that imagery. That's fantastic. And I just love the idea of like comparing engaging with David Lynch films to tarot. Mwah, chef's kiss. Brilliant. Thank you for that. Thank you. I'm just going to be thinking about that all the time now.
I
Fantastic.
love it.
But kind of like going back to like filmmakers' intent, like kind of linking, like stemming from that. And I think maybe it ties back into kind of like the idea of censorship and stuff like that. But like, for me, when it comes to engaging with films, like I like always like to ask myself the question, like, what's the reason for this being here? Like, and not necessarily in a plot way, more just why am I seeing this on screen? And I think that can dictate for me, like, my takeaway from a film. Like, for example, like, and this is the genre where it probably occurs in it the most, but say like the rape revenge genre, like I find the the films in general to be very cathartic as someone who is a survivor of rape. So that's what I take away from these films. But sometimes I'll watch a film and I'll just be like, I don't know if this specific scene needed to be here to tell, like, to have the same impact or weight that the filmmaker might have wanted. And then I'm just going, is this just here just to shock me? And that sometimes takes it away from me, and I'm just like, I end up having like almost like a negative reaction, and not in a like this film is bad, but more of a just a it leaves a poor taste in my mouth, because to me it feels like lazy filmmaking sometimes if something is just there just for shock value, whereas if it has like a specific reason to be there that's backed up by the rest of the film, then that's more interesting. But I want to know what you think about that as someone who engages with a lot of extreme cinema as well.
Well, I don't like to have a boundary with it and a binary with it, because on the one hand, part of me is like, an artist doesn't need a reason to do anything. They can do whatever they want, and that art is just as valid as any other, valid art. If we start saying, do we need this or do we need that, we get into dangerous territory. But I did think that purely until I watched a movie called oh, I hope the filmmaker doesn't listen to this. But it's called It Stains the Sands Red. And it's a zombie movie. I won't spoil what happens, but I was having a really good time. I was really enjoying it, and then bam, out of nowhere, rape scene. And I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. It was like really sexualized. It's the its sole purpose was that a man could rescue this woman. And it was like a weird, it's not exactly romantic, but if you watch the film, you'll see what I'm saying. It was, the whole point of it was to make the woman kind of fall for this savior. And immediately I was like, get fucked. Like, go away, go right away. And then I thought, no, I don't think that needed to be in. Yes, the filmmaker has a perfect right to put it in, but I have a perfect right to say, you didn't need to do that. You could have had this character development come from somewhere else. You could have had her kill her own rapist, or, save herself. That would have been really cool and cathartic. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. But so yeah, I kind of am in two minds. And like you said, I am in a difficult position to judge, because I do engage with a lot of extreme horror and extreme film in general. And I feel like any person who's not used to that would judge me for that. And I know other people who enjoy extreme horror have been judged for this, and like, why do you watch this? It doesn't need to be on screen. And then again, I go back to what I was thinking before. Well, it doesn't need to be, but it is, so I'm gonna watch it. But yeah, I think as long as the director's intentions weren't, I'm less about whether, if they want to shock me, fine, be an edgelord, like, whoa, well done, good for you. But if they're trying to be like sanctimonious, or trying to be like, oh, look how good I am for putting this in, aren't I great, everyone like applaud me, that's what pisses me off more than the I'm a 13-year-old 4chaner and I'm really edgy, is the, yeah, like I said, like the sanctimonious, holier than thou, I'm putting this in just so I can, screen cap it and put it on Twitter and show everyone what a great person I am. That pisses me off.
Oh, that's such a good point, and that's actually like really interesting. Like, because I literally just watched the latest bonus episode from the Sandman series on Netflix, Calliope, and there was a scene in that. Like, I won't say anything in case you haven't seen it, blah blah blah. But there's a scene in that that kind of literally comments on that, that there is this type of attitude of like, please, like, pat me on the back because I have a queer character on screen, or I have a black character on screen. Like, please give me the credit, please applaud me for doing this service that I didn't have to. And it's like, no, that's bullshit. Like, yes, as you said, like, sometimes the edgelord type of bro horror, oh, this is just here because I can, is annoying and tedious. And like, it for me, I'm just like, it I'm just like, it doesn't really affect me, because I'm just like, it just feels lazy. So it's not even in a case of like,
Yes.
it shouldn't be here. It's just, you could have been more creative. Like, it's more, it annoys me when it's there, because I'm just like, there could have been
Yes.
so much way more interesting ways of like telling that narrative piece. But you went for the most bare bottom reductive way of doing it. And that's just lazy filmmaking in my eyes. So I don't really care if you were trying to shock me. I am more annoyed that you couldn't think of a better way to do it.
Right,
But
at
like,
least shock me in a good way. Like, at least
exactly.
do it properly.
Exactly. Like, try and disturb me.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's different. Like, that's fine. Like, I find it lazy, but hey, do what you want. Do your lazy filmmaking. That's fine. Like, I find that less bothersome than to someone who's actually trying to get the appraise for doing something that you should just be doing from the start anyway.
Yes, and it's so obvious. Like, I don't think these directors realize how obvious they are when they're putting things in their movie just so they can get a pat on the back. And like you said, you should be doing it anyway. Like, no one's going to come up and give you a medal for casting like a woman or a person of color or a queer person. You should just be fucking doing it.
Exactly. Like, and I know that they're like, one of the things you hate the most, but like, take the Marvel films, for example. Like,
I love that everyone knows
I know it's brilliant. It's one of, but like, I hold my
our
hand up, but
legacy.
exactly, wouldn't, but hold, rep it with pride. I hold my hand up, and like, I enjoy them because I'm a comic book geek. I have been for since a child. So like, these films, like, they represent like kind of like a part of my youth that I never got to really experience or enjoy. So I'm just like, hey, it's cool. But at the same time, it really bothers me when they're just like, hey, look, we had a character that had like a pride badge on their jacket, but isn't addressed throughout the film. Or
Yes.
there was these characters of the same gender that kissed in the background and isn't addressed. And they're just like, look how great we are. And I'm just like, no. That's bullshit. And
Yes.
also, the second that you release those films into a more conservative market, you cut those scenes anyway. So, which just
Yeah.
shows that you genuinely do not give a shit.
Yeah.
And that annoy, again, it comes back to this, please applaud us for doing what we should be doing anyway.
Literally,
And
yeah.
it's just, and what's annoying as well is that you can tell that there will be fans that will be still applauding those like minute, like token decisions, and will be criticizing someone like yourself or Zoe or Kelly who enjoys extreme horror. They'll be like, oh, like there's something wrong with you for enjoying
Oh,
those
yeah.
films. But then they'll be applauding the big corporation that's like pretending to be progressive. And it's just annoying.
It's really annoying, and like you said, it's so obvious. Like, oh, Disney put a 4 second clip in that can very easily be cut. Like, oh wow, well done, great, you've solved it. Gay rights for all, because thank you, Disney. Well done. And yeah, and it's annoying, and you do see it a lot in horror. I mean, I think thankfully we are kind of moving away from it. I think especially now, because we're seeing a lot, so many more female directors, directors of color, queer directors, which is amazing, and they're taking their stories back. So it's less about tokenism and more about, like, here are these people that actually exist in the world and have stories that aren't just about them being women or them being black or them being queer. Like, these are rich characters that have lives outside of the trauma of their identities, which is another thing I hate, because that's like, it's kind of trauma porn, and not in a literal sense, with like the extreme films, but you see a lot of characters that will be cast just to die, and I'm like, did you have to make this person die because they're gay? Which is very upsetting. But yeah, I think we are getting better at it, but not too quick.
We are getting, actually, this is one of my favorite examples of like, see, we are in some ways stepping in the right direction. Like, this is like, and I know slashers aren't your bag anyway. Like, and for some reason, like, this is one of the films that came out last year that was like a lot of people didn't like. And I'm just like, I had so much fun with it, but the second like new Blumhouse Halloween, Halloween Kills, I had a great time with it. There are these two characters that are a gay couple that are just a gay couple. Like there's nothing about them being gay. Like they just happen to be really interesting, funny characters that are gay that get killed by Michael Myers, but Michael Myers kills everyone. So he's an equal opportunity killer. Like, everyone's fair game. And I'm just like, that's what we want to see. Like,
Exactly.
there's nothing
No
wrong with,
hate here.
exactly. There's nothing wrong with queer people being killed on screen if they're just being killed because they happen to be in the evil character's way, compared to this is a
Fictional,
film
yeah.
about someone who's queer being killed because they're queer. No, that's like exploiting our trauma and our pain. The other thing is fun because it's like, hey, we get to be killed by Michael Myers too.
We get to be slashed, yay.
Exactly, we
No, I know
finding
what you mean. I mean,
inclusion.
yeah, and it's like you said, it's realistic. If anyone was in Michael's way, he'd be cutting you down. Doesn't matter who you are, he does not discriminate.
Exactly, and I love how that was like an unironic, like actual powerful message from the film of like, hey, we've actually somehow been a very inclusive slasher because,
By just having a gay couple. I know it's like the sad the state of it that we've got to that, but like we are, I think, like you said, I think it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, in a weird way it is. But yeah, like, but even just as like, someone who is like a queer horror fan and is always seeking out queer horror, like, I want to see queer problematic villains. I want to see I want to see messy queer people on screen. Like and again, this comes back to something that we touched on at the start of recording, and I'd like kind of circle back to it as a broader discussion, but the fact that we're not like the only type of queer characters we're mostly getting on screen across the board, like, even in horror, are like these like cookie cutter specific ideas of what queerness should be. And I think it stems from this broader issue of like everything becoming more like puritanical, more sanitized, more desexualized. And I want to know what you think about that, because I know like historically horror has always been like, the rebellious stepchild that's been like, no, fuck what society's telling us to do, we're going to subvert it. But as you said, it feels like even horror is starting to kind of fall down that route. And I want to know what your thoughts are on that. Like, do you think there is this desanitization happening?
I think so. I mean, it makes me sad to say it, but I think it's a number of things. I think the bigger horror gets, and the more horror moves from being this weird, creepy, nerdy thing that you that weird guy at school is into, and it gets in, things, like with the Scream requel thing and new Halloween's coming in, these big blockbusters. They're going to inevitably get toned down because weird sex doesn't sell and gross violence doesn't sell. I mean, I'm thinking of like, when was it? Like, I think it was last year, Titane was released, Julia Ducournau's Titane, which I really liked. But I remember before I saw it, everyone was saying, oh my God, it's so like sexually subversive. It's so like, it's so dirty. It's so filthy. I watched it. And I think there's two scenes, maybe two scenes where there's a naked woman, and it's it's implied masturbation. She's having sex with a car, basically. But I was like, this isn't the. I thought everyone was pearl clutching about this. I was expecting like Cronenberg crash levels of weird, unconventional sex. I think that's what it comes down to as well, is that the sex was unconventional. It was, a tattooed woman who wasn't like, how can I phrase this? Because she is absolutely beautiful, but not conventionally, Western beauty standards attractive. And it was a masturbate a female masturbation, which is still the most terrifying thing in the whole world. But I think horror has become really scared of like. Of going there. I recently watched Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was I'd never seen it before, and it was so fucking good. It was so terrible, but
Oh,
so good.
I know. It's like
So
so
good.
ridiculously camp and
So
just.
camp. And it was so like horny, and I thought they would never release this now. They would never do it. And I don't want to sound like, oh, snowflake culture, because that's not what I'm getting at. Like, I think the more that we become, frightened of unconventional sex, or not even unconventional sex,
Just
just
sex.
any sex. Yeah, just literally just sex. I'm literally off the top of my head, I'm trying to think what was the last like sex scene that I saw in a Western horror movie, and I'm drawing a blank. I haven't seen Bodies, Bodies, Bodies yet. I'm seeing that tomorrow, so
Ooh,
hopefully that might come through.
like, yeah,
But
for me, like, of a film at least that came out this year, what jumps to the top of my head is Ty West's X from the start of the year.
exactly,
And, like, I'm just like, thank fuck for filmmakers
yes,
like Ty West, who's like,
exactly.
no, fuck what, like, this weird puritanical regressiveness that society is going down. Fuck that. Like, horror
Yes,
is supposed to be subversive. And I love,
exactly.
and also as well, I love how much he, because, like, I've always, like, I've always been someone who's like seen like the overlaps between horror and porn as these types of filmmaking that are both shunned by mainstream film fans and mainstream society. And I love how Ty West was able to perfectly encapsulate how both of these genres of film have so much in common with each other. And it was just such a good film. But yes, that was like the most recent kind of example of like a sex scene that also
Yes.
felt sexy, because like that's been the problem as well, is that even across the board in our media, there are so many films that have sex scenes in it which don't feel sexy. And I'm just like,
Yes.
how is this happening? Like how have you made something that's supposed to be sexy so unsexy? And it's just like, and I like your point about Titane was a good example, and I love that point you made about it was like this reaction to something unconventional, because I don't think it's necessarily that horror as a genre is afraid to go there. I think it's more that horror feel like fans are
Yes.
afraid to engage with something that transgresses what society tells them is acceptable,
Yep.
particularly when it comes to sex and sexuality. And I like part of me thinks that the reason we've had this global, weird, regressive step back into almost like Victorian puritanical ideas of sex is because of social media. Like, social
Yep.
media dictates how expressive you can be, and it says that the naked human body is a bad thing. So therefore, we're reacting to that. And when we see it on screen, we're like, oh, we shouldn't be seeing that.
Yes.
And it's like, what?
I know, and I think like you're completely right. Also, social media has warped how we think humans are meant to look. And when you see two perfect airbrushed bodies on screen, yes, maybe they're going at it and it's like on paper it's sexy. It's not sexy because it's not real. And I think deep down the human brain recognizes, this is not an organic encounter. And again, going back to X, that's what like X was so refreshing, because I think Ty West also, as you said, he was like sick of the demonization of horror and porn, and he was like, you know what, you guys, you're getting too puritanical for my liking, here's a cum shot. I love that. I think that's great. And I think I'm so glad that he went there. And yeah, I thought it was great. I'm very excited for Pearl. I'm hoping that
I'm
he
hearing
keeps
good things
up
about
with
it from
that.
people who've seen it.
Yes.
But yes, and actually going back to that, like, kind of point we were making about it seems to be it's less horror as a genre that is afraid to be transgressive. It's more horror fans are afraid to engage with that. Like, one of the big kind of negative reactions to X was the scene of the old couple having sex. And like people were saying, accusing Ty West of like putting that in there for shock value, or people, you know, saying it should be something that horrifies people. And I'm just like, no, sit with that, unpack that. Like, if you think that means that you think old people having sex is horrifying, and like Ty West is holding that mirror up to you, and it was so clever the way, like, so anytime I'm seeing someone like criticize X for that scene, I'm just like, automatically my brain is like, you just have negative ideas of sex. You're telling me
I
more
know,
about your
like
personal
literally, yeah.
life.
Well, I saw so many things as well. It was like, oh, I guess the old lady in X is Pearl. I didn't clock at the time because I'm stupid. But yeah, people were like, oh, he's so exploitative for showing Pearl's naked body. I'm like, hang on, he literally just showed an old woman's naked body. You're the one that said it's exploitative. You're the one that said it's gross. Like, he presented a sex scene. He didn't put any like weird comical music on it. He didn't, you know, people saw it as gross because people are conditioned to think that old people having sex is gross, and that's not fair because, you know,
Everyone
old
deserves to
people
get their rocks
do.
off. Like, come on. It's the most human
And they were
thing.
loving it. They were
Exactly.
loving it.
I love how killing together brought them together and they were able to have sex
Exactly. I
again. Like, you
know.
know,
I
it's
thought it was
actually a
great.
beautiful story.
It
Exactly. That's the, you know, first it was good for her. Now it's an extension of that
was
is good for them.
great. Good
And
for the
like,
old sex
yeah,
couple.
exactly. But, yeah, oh, I love everything that you were saying there. Yes, like we're on in sync with so many things. It's so great. So kind of like to bring us to like a nice kind of like closing off question, and I'm excited to hear what films will be on this list for you. But like for yourself, like what are your comfort horror films? If you've had like a shit week, shit day, what films do you turn to because you know you're gonna have a good time with it?
Oh, I think for me, like a lot of people. So I want someone to do a study about this. It's not me because I'm lazy, but I think there is a real connection between found footage horror and And I don't know if it's because found footage movies are like literally home movies. They're literally shot on, you know, cameras that you could have at home. So they kind of make you feel relaxed. When I'm sick, I watch all four Paranormal Activity movies in a row. I've never gotten past four. I don't know if I will. But there's just something about them. I think it's the fact that they require very little attention from me. There's no. You know, there are jump scares in them, but I've watched them so much, I know where the jump scares are coming from. Something about just watching people, normal human beings, go about their life is quite comforting to me. And not just Paranormal Activity. Recently, I watched a film called Death of a Vlogger, which was a great Scottish found footage movie. I think it was Scottish. I'm sorry if it's not. But that immediately bumped that. I was like, I'm going to be watching this a lot. Another guilty pleasure one is Unfriended Dark Web, which I watched it once and hated it. I gave it 1 star on Letterboxd, and then I watched it when I was ill, and I was like, I love this movie so much. It sucks, but again, it's the whole like screen life or found footage is really comfortable for me, and I'm sure a lot of people in our generation, because this is how we live our lives. We live our lives through screens, and we live our lives on phones and computers. I also, you know, go for films that I've seen a million times, something like 28 Days Later or American Psycho, which I can quote word for word. And also, I really like like short, I've gone into this habit recently of watching like short collections. There's this Japanese series called Hontou ni Atta, which basically means like, wow, it's really scary. And it's just like an hour collection of 10-minute short movies. And they're all exactly the same. They all have the exact same storyline. But I think that's why I like them. I think people go to horror for comfort. And I know some people go to gore for comfort, or you know, supernatural things. I know a lot of people go to like gothic horrors, like you know, your Crimson Peaks and things like that, or your Hammers. But for me, it's mostly found footage. And also because I find tapping noise is relaxing. So
Oh, nice. So it's a nice
if
sensory thing as
yeah,
well.
little bit of ASMR there. So, but you know, that's why I like dark web, because they were clicking on the keyboards, and I was like, oh, that's nice. I'm gonna fall asleep.
You know, picking up from what you actually said there, fuck that phrase, guilty pleasure. That phrase can go in the bin because
Yes.
society tells us to feel shame for things that are unconventional or for things that other people don't like or for things that are objectively bad. And no, fuck that. If we find
Yes.
joy in something, shout that from the rooftops. We shouldn't feel guilty for pleasure. And that's
Very
literally
true.
where that phrase comes from. Because again, like you said earlier, oh, the idea of female masturbation, the most terrifying thing in the world. That's because, it comes from, all circles back to this weird, Christianity, puritanical stance that sex and sexuality is shameful, so pleasure is shameful. So
Yes.
guilty pleasure is basically this idea that, I shouldn't be enjoying this, so but I'm afraid to admit it. And it's just like, no, fuck it. If we enjoy something,
Yes.
shout it from the rooftops. I
I
am.
love dark web.
Yes, thank you. Because I am a huge component for Ghost Shark. It is one of the most it is objectively awful, but I
Love
love
it, you
it
love
so
it.
much and I recommend it to everyone because I think it's brilliant. And yeah, so I hold like I it's not a guilty pleasure. I love that film with my full heart.
There's no guilty pleasure, there's only pleasure.
Yes, thank you. And that's my tagline for this episode.
Yes.
Brilliant. But as a last kind of closing off question, before I let you go for the rest of your evening and your weekend, what are your feelings for the future of horror? Are you hopeful? Do you think we're going to continue becoming more inclusive and progressive? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited. This year has been
Right?
phenomenal.
It's been a good
You
year.
know, it's been good. We've had, again, these films aren't everyone's cup of tea, but for me personally, you know, we've had X, we've had Nope, we've had Men, we've had Resurrection, we've had Watcher. I'm sure I'm going to see Bodies tomorrow. I know I'm going to love it. We've had Crimes of the Future. We've had We're All Going to the World's Fair. I could list a million more, but I can't off the top of my head. But it has been like banger after banger after banger. And with those films, there is a huge numbers of female directors, queer directors, directors of color. And I think horror's at a really, really exciting moment right now. I think we're seeing even, you know, straight white men are telling stories that they might not have told.
Yes.
A few years ago. I think there's a creativity blooming in everyone, and I think the more open we are and the more accepting we are, it opens up doors for everyone, you know, marginalized people obviously the most important there, but even, you know, your cis straight white men, they're getting in on it, they're getting creative with it, in ways that they might not have felt comfortable before. But this is the great thing, when you include everyone, that opens doors for everyone. And that's why horror is so fantastic, because especially now, not necessarily so much in the past, but I think right now more than any other genre, horror is inclusive as hell. Not as much as it should be. Obviously, it could be way more, but I think it's getting there, and I'm very, very excited. If this year, you know, we're not even, wait, are we halfway through? We are halfway through. But, you know, there is so much more still to come, and very excited. Yeah, I think we're in a very good place.
100%. And just even to think the fact that we even have things like Shudder and Arrow Video Player and all these platforms that are dedicated just to horror, that didn't exist before. So yeah, we are
Yes.
in like so yeah, like there's part of me that there is a part of me that's fearful of this kind of regressive swing back because I can't help but just if you look at the way things have gone throughout history, everything is responding to what's come before. And if we look outside of the horror genre, in the UK, US, there's we're seeing stuff like transphobia and things like that are being front and center politically. And yeah, so they're like, there's things I'm fearful for, and I'm hoping that horror continues to be subversive and continues to like say, fuck that noise, we can be better.
Yes, yeah. I think as it, you know, I think we've talked about X a lot, but I think if more films see the love that X has gotten
Yeah.
for being subversive and for being unapologetic, and you're right, we really need to get to a place where horror isn't demonizing the people that it needs to be putting at the forefront. And I think, like I said, we do need to, you can always do better at that kind of thing, but I think I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
And I think we're not perfect, we're not there yet. But I think horror gives people, like you mentioned, especially, you know, trans people who are having the scariest times of their lives right now. I have so many trans friends in horror who feel safe in that genre and feel like that is the, because I've always said, like, sorry, going off on a tangent here, horror has always belong to marginalized people. It's
Yes.
always belonged to women. It's always belonged to trans people. It's always belonged to people of color, because horror is for the people who feel like they don't fit in and who have been hurt and who have been traumatized. So I think finally these people are getting their turn at the forefront. And as long as we don't see a backlash against that and we keep getting stronger and stronger, it's going to be good times.
Yeah, and that's a nice hopeful message to close out on. I like that. So yeah, before I let you go, where can people find you and support your writing and your work?
You can find me on everywhere, Twitter and Instagram at HornbloodFire. You can find my writing on Ghouls Magazine and Grimoire of Horror, and as I mentioned earlier, somewhere else quite soon, which I will, you know, you can find that on my Twitter when I put it on there. I also have a website where you can sign up to my newsletter, which is fun. I do like little games and stuff in there. That's hornbloodfire.com. You can check out my podcast everywhere. She's on Spotify, she's on Apple, she's on Anchor. Season 2 will be coming shortly, next month, I'm hoping. So yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Amazing, amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And to my listeners, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future drops in my Why Horror series.